Everybody, and welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts. We'll be here until 11 o'clock this morning. An open line this first hour, then Illini Friday with Kent Brown and Barry Hauser with an outline of what's happening on this homecoming weekend. In the news this morning, and as far as sports fans are concerned, in the news all day yesterday and maybe the day before that, politics in Chicago has reached into high school sports as usual, as Illinois is forced to pick between two top basketball players. The result is the Illini have a five-star point guard and a four-star wing who wanted to come here, moves on to Iowa State. Take some calls about that here in just a moment. As far as the other headlines are concerned, Jim Dye writes that one of the realities of academic freedom is that it sometimes ventures into academic folly that can't be ignored. Did you know that one U of I faculty member asserts that mathematics, like 2 plus 2 equals 4, is just another construct of white privilege that discriminates against those not in that club? And yesterday, some of the callers were wondering about the JFK files. It looked for a while like they were not going to be opened. And now some of them have been. I don't know what the percentage, but some of the files are out, and a couple of interesting stories have been picked up from the ones just released. The files include a memo on the United States plans for killing Fidel Castro. Files also reveal a British reporter said he was told that there is, quote, big news coming before the shots were fired. Champaign County Chamber of Commerce names as a nonprofit the Habitat for Humanity as the Small Business of the Year. My congratulations to Habitat for Humanity and also for the Champaign County Chamber for picking them. That's a tremendous organization. Sometimes the not-for-profits get overlooked in these kinds of contests, shall we call them, or when people pick outstanding companies, etc. Well, the Grand Marshal of the Homecoming Parade is a grand young man. He's one of my favorites of people that have played football, the University of Illinois. His name is Brandon Lloyd. After a good NFL career, is on track now to finish his degree, and he'll be riding in that convertible. Hope he's got a warm coat. Champaign County Nursing Home has been charged $75,000 in fines in connection with the deaths of two of its residents earlier this year. The House narrowly passes a $4 trillion budget, clearing the way for tax reform effort. And CVS is in talks to buy Aetna. The going price, or the asking price, is $66 billion. Ralph Peters writes that the Bergdahl sentencing isn't about him. It's about setting an example for any future traitors. And Howard Kurtz writes that President Trump vowed to slash government after all. So those are just some of the headlines. I would guess that there are several people still buzzing as they were all day yesterday and last night. I did watch the announcement, and It looked to me like they, after the announcement was made, that neither the player or his mother were, I don't know, they were very emotional, tears in their eyes and so forth. Perhaps it was because that he picked Iowa State and deep down in his heart had said before, just hours before, maybe even minutes before, that he really wanted to go to Illinois. But certainly a victory for Iowa State. They have now lined up some of the top players in the state of Illinois, and they're going to have a very, very good recruiting class, that's for sure. Well, let's take our first break right here. When we come back, I'll tell you what a couple of other writers have said about what happened yesterday. And if you have any questions or comments, I'd like to hear from them, from you. The temporary phone number is 351-5667. You can send us a text at 351-5357. That's the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. But our first break right here, then we'll come back to get started. We're back on Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. Lauren Tate has joined us on the phone. Good morning, Mr. Tate.
Good morning.
Well, tell me in 25 words or less, what happened?
Well, I think there was just too much animosity between the two sides, between Iodesuma, who, you know, and Taylor Horton Tucker. Taylor Horton Tucker left the team this summer, and from that moment on, he became an outstanding player that he hadn't been when he was playing with Io. And then there were words back and forth between the two sides, and you know, the Irwin people were upset with the things that Horton Tucker said, and Horton Tucker's family was upset with things that were being said back and forth. And I thought they got it resolved on Tuesday, although Monday it really looked bad, and then Tuesday it looked like they had got that Underwood had gone and called off practice and went up. This is more than 25 words, Jim. But Underwood had gone had called off practice Tuesday, and he didn't practice Wednesday. He took 2 days off. I thought that he had the thing resolved in Chicago, but he came back, and the next thing you know, Horton Tucker had swung back the other way. And I say Horton Tucker, I mean, this is a family thing. I mean, he was going with Io's sister. I mean, there's all kinds of involvements here that were just made it impossible. So,
as far as Illinois is concerned, did they have to make a decision? Was it Illinois' place to say we're going to take Io and not you?
Well, Io made his decision first, so they had Io.
Right.
Io wasn't going to come. He was going to. There was a moment in time when he considered reversing his decision after he had announced to Illinois because he found out that Horton Tucker was coming to Illinois. Horton Tucker intended at one point to come to Illinois early this week. And it all swung because they just couldn't come together. That was the thing that was said all summer long. If you get one, you won't get the other because they're at odds with each other. And that, and not just the two players, but the families and the supporters of the Irwin group, as opposed to Team Rose, which is where Horton Tucker eventually went. This was all an AAU dispute that occurred in the summer. Now, they go to different high schools, of course. Io goes to Morgan Park, and Horton Tucker goes to Simeon,
mm-hmm.
but they just, there's no way you're going to get, I shouldn't say there's no way, but it made it very difficult to get both of them when there were so many different things involved, people involved.
So if the Illini decided to stick with the guy that they had, and alienate the other side, and if they decided to somehow to go with Horton Tucker, would have alienated the second side. So there was no win there, really.
It didn't sound like it to me. I mean, your word right, alienation is right, because it would have been difficult for them to play together, I think, Jim, after they broke up this summer. You know, that was the thing that killed. And the shame of it is that both of them wanted to come to Illinois. But Io decided first, and then the forces that were supportive of Horton Tucker basically And I want to tell you something. There were a bunch of people from the urban group that wanted Iowa to back out if Horton Tucker came to Illinois. I mean, it was just a no-win for both. I mean, they got a really good player in Iowa, but we'll find out how good Horton Tucker is. But it looks to me like he's a pretty good player, too.
You know who the winner is in all this?
Mm-hmm.
Iowa
yeah,
State.
Yeah.
Because they have now got, the number 2, 3, and 4 players. And
yeah.
Their recruiting class is going to be one of the tops in the country.
Yeah, that's right.
But here's a very interesting from the mother. I'm taking this from, this is Mark Tupper's column. After the announcement, his mother, talking about Horton Tucker, his mother Shirley reached out to Illini fans through Kedrick Prince, a freelance writer for the Dispatch Argus, and she said, "I would like to tell all the Illini fans we love how classy they are. On our visit, we can honestly say we never experienced anything like it. We know you love your basketball. It was truly obvious to my family, especially to Talen. We did what we had to do and what was best for him." So their visit down here, from the time they had the visit, he was sold on Illinois. It looked at that time looked like free sailing.
Yeah, I mean the coaches felt they were certain that they had him. Yeah, there's no question. On the weekend, and then things just changed. At Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday were all different days. You know, they just it swung back and forth in those days because more people got involved. It was up to his mother. He'd come to Illinois. The problem with Illinois lately is they sell the mother, but they don't sell everybody else. You know, that same thing happened with Jeremiah Tillman. They sold the mother. The mother was sold on Illinois. It was a done deal. And then the dad gets involved with Missouri, and then the next thing you know, he's going back to Missouri. And in this case, again, you had the mother, but you had Talen too. But there was just so much animosity between those two families and those two players, and even to the point where I don't know how it came that I was told this that Talen was also dating, had also dated. I don't know if it continued, but had also dated Io's sister. It sounds like Romeo and Juliet to me. I don't know. It's a real mess. It's too bad because Illinois missed out on a really good basketball player.
Well, there were a lot of rumors all day yesterday. If you looked on Twitter or on some of the columns and podcasts and the blogs and those kinds of things. But when Deion Thomas came out and learned the outcome earlier in the day and broke the news saying that he had the hashtag being sad after he said what he said. He said he's not coming to Illinois, and it's very sad. And once Deion found out about that and put it out there, that kind of clinched it for me. I don't, you know, if there was anybody that would know, it would be Deion, as Simeon, a guy in Chicago, and of course a great Simeon player.
Yeah, well, you know, it really was swung around yesterday. It was definite yesterday. He wasn't coming, I guess, but. It's just I don't know how you get involved in these things. It's almost like Jim. It's almost like when Jimmy Collins was recruiting for Illinois, the one thing he had to do when he went to Chicago was to make sure he didn't get a player from one gang and a player from the rival gang, because the two guys couldn't get together. Now they might be from different schools, but he said the gang thing is a big thing. I mean, that's just one. I'm not saying that these two players were involved in gangs, but they're on opposite sides of the issues here, and they don't like each other. Apparently they don't want to play together. At least the people around them don't want them to play together, and that's what happened in this situation. I don't know. I thought I don't know what Underwood could have done. I think he did everything he could. I think they thought they had Talen Horton Tucker pretty much locked up, but once Talen went back to Chicago and the people around him, there's so many people involved. And the urban group was you know, supportive of Iowa, and they didn't want him to. They didn't want those two guys to play together.
So do we want the Irvin group mad at us, or do we want the people at Simeon mad at us?
They got another great player coming up there, you know, in a couple. I mean, they've got good, great players every year in that summer AAU thing, and you got to hang with them. I mean, I don't know. I just what you're dealing with here is really a difficult situation. But I think they have Io, so naturally they have the Irvins on their side, and they didn't take Horton Tucker, so they still have the Irvins on their side. All I can say, I don't know where it goes from here, but I know they need a big man, and they could use another wing. Although they got several wings on the team, and this is not the most important. The most important position now is to get somebody that can defend the post somewhere along the line, and it has to be somebody better than Oberg Boyden, because he's the center that they've got for backup purposes right now, and you need to get somebody better. Otherwise, you've got your center already on the team.
So we got the two scholarships left for 2018?
We got two left now. They might save them for the next year. I don't know. You know, they basically don't lose anybody. They don't lose anybody but Allstark after this season. They only have one senior. That's assuming nobody else transfers. But they'll have four next year, or they have these two plus one. Excuse me. They'll have three next year.
Okay, well, I don't know if anybody else wants to talk about this or not. I know that people were really interested in it yesterday, maybe after it happened. It said, well, okay, there's another one, and it kind of makes you just kind of cringe every time you say, you know, we got somebody, because we've had so many bad experiences with Snyder, for one, down at Louisville, and just, you know, last-minute type things where you think you have the person locked up, and it doesn't work that way. It didn't work that way.
Short, doesn't it? I mean, you start, you got guys committed, you got them signed, you got Tillman, you got him committed, you got him signed, and on the next thing you know, they're pulling out. And I said yesterday, this thing is so furious the last 2 days that I don't even know if what happened last night is final, because a commitment, Jim, is just somebody's word. And you saw Landers Nolly, how quickly he came. He announced one day for Georgia and announced the next day for Virginia Tech.
a commitment is not a signing, that's for sure.
And the other thing is, there'll be four or 500 of them transfer after next year anyway. I mean, this is just a free agency. I mean, guys going left and right, one team or another. Did you see the thing? I put something in the paper the other day about Michigan and where all their players come from. I mean, they've got guys. Their best player, Jim, is a transfer from Ohio. Their next best player is a transfer from Williams College. Their next best player is a guy from Berlin, Germany. I mean, I'm just saying that off the top of my head, but I mean, the players come from everywhere, and they move so quickly. And what they say one day doesn't mean anything about what they might do the next day.
So there is a chance that anybody that is committed can change their mind, obviously, and a lot of them have, as you pointed out.
Yeah, and some of them sign, and we signed Tillman, and the next thing you know, he changed his mind, and he got a release and went right to Missouri. And now he's playing from, by the way, you see he had 7 fouls in 13 minutes in that first game and that exhibition game.
Yeah, and just a few points, too, wasn't it? Like,
well, he had 12. He had 12 points.
12 points in 13 minutes.
Yeah, and 7 rebounds. He's a good player, Jim, but he's going to foul, there's no doubt. I mean, he's a shot blocking. But if he can reduce the fouls, and that's a big if, if he can reduce fouls, he's going to be a terrific player for them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it might be the second year before he really gets to be a top player, because Porter's going to dominate everything. Porter, the big kid that was going to go to Washington, and his dad got hired at Missouri, and he followed his dad there.
Gee, that was really a lucky for them that his dad got hired then, wasn't it?
I'd hire him too. So, probably only for 1 year, but he's a good player, and he's still a contender to be number one in the draft.
All right. Appreciate your time this morning. Got a break for the news here and move on. But very strange story, and the happenings just from one day to the next were just kind of mind-boggling. And then as we kind of as it all comes to a head with the announcement, I guess the word is move on. I for one, I don't think there's anybody to blame here at the University of Illinois. They did everything they could do.
Yeah, it was one of those, hey, he's coming. No, he isn't. Yes, he is. No, he isn't. Depending on which day. We wound up on the wrong side on the last day.
Exactly right. Well, thank you, Lauren. Talk to you on Monday, and we'll have a chance to talk to I don't know how long we're going to be able to talk about Illinois and Wisconsin. That Wisconsin is now a 27-point favorite. That's the largest margin of any that I found this morning looking at the odds on the games. 27. Yeah. That's a bunch.
Yeah. Yeah, that tells you all you need to know.
Okay. Appreciate appreciate you being on. Talk to you Monday.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye-bye. And I'll call your attention to a story written by in the News Gazette this morning about this, and another written by Mark Tupper over in Decatur explains it in some detail. And I have another one here from the Chicago Tribune, written by Shannon Ryan, who is the beat writer for the Trib on Illinois sports. So all those are available if you want any more details or if you have your own opinion about this. We're going to talk about it later, but right now it is 9:30, and the time for the news headlines with Brian Barnhart, back with more Open Line. This is Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. The phone line's open, an open line going up until 10 o'clock, and then we'll talk to Kent Brown and Barry Hauser, our Illini Friday show. And following that, from about 10:30 until 11, more open line. But right now, the phone lines are open at 351-5667. The Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. So if you have something on your mind, any of the headlines that we have brought up, you want to pick up on those as we go along and talk about them in a little more detail, that's fine. If you want to bring up something new, something different, that's okay too, because that's why we do an open line, open for you. We talked about this a little bit the other day, and Jim Dye has now written an editorial about it, and I think there's a lot of good stuff in there that I want to go over right now and get your opinion of this. He says one of the realities of academic freedom is that it sometimes ventures into academic folly that can't be ignored. And he writes, watching one of the world's great research universities reduced to a politically correct caricature isn't for the squeamish. But that's what happened again this week. In the aftermath of news reports that a University of Illinois faculty member's assertion that mathematics, you know, 2 plus 2 equals 4, is just another construct of white privilege that discriminates against those not in the club. U of I education professor Rochelle Gutierrez makes that claim, among many others, in her chapter of a book with the unintentionally ironic title, Building Support for Scholarly Practices in Mathematic Methods. Scholarly? With a question mark. It was almost as disappointing to see U of I Provost John Wolkin genuflect in Gutierrez's direction, calling her an established and admired scholar in the area of mathematics education, and stating that exploring challenging pedagogical questions is exactly what faculty in a world-class college of education should be doing. The University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana is committed to academic freedom, Wolkin said. And Dye writes, academic freedom, of course, is not the issue, as Wolkin well knows. and neither is the capacity to explore challenging pedagogical questions. If Guterres chooses to assert that on many levels mathematics itself operates as whiteness, she's clearly free to do so. But that doesn't excuse her or the university that so warmly embraces her research, musings, probably would be a better word, from accounting to her fellow academics and the outside world for either the accuracy of the claim or the wisdom of basing mathematics education on such a spurious notion. U of I administrators are so terrified of ruffling the feathers of campus grievance mongers that they're willing to turn a blind eye to almost anything. But one thing is for sure, U of I President Timothy Colleen, when he's trying to hit up wealthy alums for big donations, will make it a point not to give them copies of Guterres's chapter. Mathematicians know there are right answers and wrong answers to the functions and conjectures that they study. Many actually state the precision of the field is what they like most about it. Unfortunately, there is a growing movement on college campuses that contends that math and science are not really math and science, but politics in disguise, and must be understood and rethought on that basis. A professor of women's studies at the University of California, Davis, contends that science has earned its authority through its co-constitution with colonization and slavery and must be replaced with an anti-science, anti-racist, feminist approach to knowledge production. That this is gibberish masquerading as groundbreaking thought doesn't mean it doesn't have adherence inside the academy, especially in the politicized academic departments where grievance politics reigns. That's why Guterres has unintentionally done the public a service with her writings. This kind of nonsense, notwithstanding Provost Wolken's resolute defense, can't stand the light of day. So let her continue to preach that politicized math helps you deconstruct and negotiate the high-stakes world of testing and standardization, that math curricula emphasizing terms like a couple of terms that are developed by Greeks and other Europeans, and that mathematics operates with unearned privilege in society just like whiteness. People will understand instinctively that her educational activism simply doesn't add up. Indeed, it does not. To the phones for Alan. Hello, Alan.
Morning, Jim. About the recruitment debacle of yesterday. It just seems like every time we go into Chicago or East St. Louis, ends up being more bad things than good things. I just don't quite get it. I mean, Tucker knew that we were going after Iowa. Why did he put us in the top of the list? I mean, if he really didn't want to come, if he comes. And
He wanted to come. Tucker wanted to come.
Okay, what changed it? Or he didn't get along with Iowa or something that had to do with AAU.
Well, that's right. They had they were on the same AAU team, a Mac Irvin's team, and then sometime during the summer, he decided to leave that team and to get more exposure on another team. And he evidently said some things about Mac Irvin's team that they didn't like. And then he went ahead with the other team, and that's where he did indeed get his exposure and. All of a sudden, all the offers began to flow in. So that's what happened. But when he came on his visit to the University of Illinois, he and his mother both of us said, this is the place. And he was ready to commit. And then there all kinds of people got involved in it. The the families, the AAU teams.
Sounds familiar, don't it?
Coaches. It sounds very familiar. Yes, it does. And somebody had written a story I saw this morning that says, what's this deal about Illinois and Simeon? And it reeled off a number of Simeon players that, you know, we think of Nick Anderson and Deion Thomas and, you know, people like that. There have been several Simeon players that just haven't made it. So,
yeah.
But that's where we are. I, as I've said before, I don't think the University of Illinois could have, or Coach Underwood could have done anything else.
Well, I think that's part of the problem with Bruce Weber and John Gross. They just didn't want to play that game. I mean, you know, they heard how he's going to have to do it or what he's going to have to do, and they just wouldn't do it. Ultimately, that cost them, but I can see where they're coming from, too.
Okay, appreciate it, Ellen. Thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Orville. Hello, Orville.
How are you? How's it going?
I'm good. How are you, man?
I'm pretty upset.
About?
Well, Io said he's only going to play 1 year, and then if the pros think he's good enough, he's going to jump. Is that worth giving up on Tucker? So, I mean, I heard that over radio, so I just... When Taylor decided to go to Iowa, I thought, well, if he goes to Iowa and becomes an outstanding player, we're only going to have Iowa for 1 year. So,
yeah, it's Iowa State that he's going to.
Yeah, but Iowa said 1 year and I'm gone.
Well, it isn't so bad to get players that are good enough to go to the NBA. There is no guarantee that he's going to be like that. You know, a lot of players think they're ready to go, but we'll just have to see after he plays a year whether he's ready for the NBA or not. But I think a lot of them like to do that, and I think that's the kind of player, the player with those kinds of skills, and are the very people that we should be recruiting. Kentucky's done pretty well with it.
Well, it's just the principle behind the whole thing.
Well, I know it is. You're exactly right about that. It shouldn't be the that shouldn't be the goal of these people. But let's face it, there's a whole bunch of people, a whole bunch of recruits that the only thing on their mind is not necessarily a education from the University of Illinois or any other university. This is just a kind of the minor leagues for the NBA.
About to prepare, you know, like Kentucky people do, just wait and see who you're going to get next year after this one leaves. So you guys have a good one. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, well, thank you. Appreciate your call. We'll take a break here. We're coming right back on this open line here on Penny. This is Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. Here is the phone number, 351-5667. 351-5667. Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. If you have something you would like to talk about today, just jump right in. Coming up after the 10 o'clock news, we'll visit with Kent Brown and Barry Hauser and talk about homecoming and all the events and the band and all those things, everything you ever needed to know about what's happening this weekend. In fact, the News Gazette has a very interesting section in the paper this morning. Call your attention to that. It's got a lot of a nice copy, a lot of it's an 8-page special section commemorating the U of I's 150th anniversary. So take a look at that. If we have time, we'll tell you a couple things that that are in there that are really very, very interesting. The whole thing is fun to read, that's for sure. What is the best age to retire over the last 2 years? The average retirement age has been 63. The professionals at Busey Wealth Management can help you plan the right time for you. Deciding when to retire depends on your lifestyle preferences, the changes in circumstances such as divorce, health considerations, and financial readiness. Busey Wealth Management can help determine your optimal strategy. They'll review a variety of variables, such as how much you've saved, how much you plan to spend, and your life expectancy. The average is 84 for males and 86 for females. Their experts understand that no two situations are alike. They'll take time to listen and to understand your needs. Years of experience allow unique insight into planning a range of situations. Rest easy knowing they will simplify the complexities of planning for retirement. You can also utilize the retirement calculators at Busey.com to get a better idea of how long your retirement savings will last and how much you spend each month in retirement. The experts at Busey Wealth Management can help identify your objectives, design a game plan to achieve your goals, and implement a program that fits your needs. Visit Busey.com or stop by one of their many convenient locations today for solutions for your lifetime. Well, we didn't get all of the JFK files released, but some. I don't know how many exactly that were released and how many are left not to be released at this time, but among the thousands of records released yesterday by the National Archives in relation to the 1963 assassination, the one file labeled Top Secret contained a memo with explicit details of U.S. plans for bumping off longtime Cuban leader Fidel Castro. The CIA had been involved in assassination plots against the communist leader as early as late 1959 or 1960, the New York Daily News reported, citing the now unclassified documents. Operation Mongoose, it was publicly known, was a coordinated effort to topple the Castro regime, but the details of how this was going to be done had remained secret for decades. The Washington Examiner details the intelligence reports that explored five ways the U.S. considered going about Castro's assassination: using explosive underwater seashells, a poisoned bodysuit, both plans thought to exploit Castro's love for diving, a lone gunman, botulism pills, and a bounty for the leader's capture or death. One memo cited possible collusion with mob boss Sam Giancana for a paid hit. It was clear that any attempt to topple the Castro regime had to be covert in order to be successful. Ultimately, the ravages of time took care of the job. Castro's health declined for years before his death at age 90 in November of 2016. People commented on this story. One said, "This is the type of records that Obama wanted out to weaken the U.S. This should never be out." And another, "Cuba equals North Korea in our backyard back in the 50s and 60s. All this was justified to protect our country." And I knew smoking those cigars all those years would eventually take its toll on Castro. And another, "It would be great for us to talk and normalize. Every Cuban needs computer cars, construction equipment, get it, food, etc., etc. Could be a moneymaker for the U.S., as people comment on sometimes on very serious stories with their own brand of their own brand of humor, or what they consider humor. And the other big news coming out of this release of the files was the caller said only that the Cambridge News reporter should call the American Embassy in London for some big news and then hung up. That's a document from a former CIA Deputy Director James Angleton. The reporter, who was not identified in the November 26, 1963 report, never received a call of this kind before, and M15 said that he is known to them as a sound and loyal person with no security record. M15 is Britain's security service, similar to the CIA. After Kennedy's death, the reporter told the Cambridge police about the call, and the police informed M15. The important point is that the call was made, according to M15 calculations, about 25 minutes before the president was shot. Yesterday, President Donald Trump blocked the release of hundreds of records on the assassination, bending to CIA and FBI appeals, while the National Archives came out Thursday night with quite a few others. "I have no choice," Trump said in a memo, citing potentially irreversible harm to national security if he were to allow all records to come out now. He placed those files under a six-month review while letting 2,800 others come out, racing a deadline to honor a law mandating their release. The documents that were released show federal agents madly chasing after tips, however thin, in the days after November 22nd, assassination, and juggling rumors and leads worldwide. The materials also cast a wide net over varied activities of the Kennedy administration, such as its covert efforts to upend Fidel Castro's government in Cuba. A CIA spokesperson told Fox News that the agency had released all but about 18,000 of its more than 87,000 documents related to the assassination, and promised that the outstanding records would also be made available. Spokesperson added that some of the remaining documents contained redactions that were undertaken with the intent to protect information in the collection whose disclosure would harm national security. This included the names of CIA assets and current and former CIA officers, as well as specific intelligence methods and partnerships that remain viable to protecting the nation today. So that's just a couple of the things that came out. Maybe there will be more as people continue to sift through these thousands of documents that were released. We're going to break for the CBS News here at the top of the hour. Then we're going to have our Illini Friday program and talk with Kent Brown and Barry Hauser. Then after that, around 10:30 or so, more open line up until 11 here on DWS in Champaign-Urbana. And welcome back to our Illini Friday program. As promised, in the studio, Kent Brown and Barry Hauser. To remind you, this is a program we do before every Illinois home football game, and this is a kind of a special one because this is always a special time at the University of Illinois with the homecoming, so we got a lot of activities. And before we get into the homecoming activities, Barry, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about all those high school bands that you had in town. When, was that last weekend?
Yeah, last Saturday we had the 47th annual Illinois Marching Band Championships, and we had 47 bands that attended from the state of Illinois based on IHSA classification in terms of school size. So we started the competition at 8:15 and 8:15 a.m., and then we finished everything 10 p.m., so about 5,180 high school students who were performing on the field, plus all their parents, directors, and then all the spectators that came in as well. So weather agreed with us, and it was a spectacular day, but a very, very long day.
You take a break for lunch and things like that?
Yeah, our students did for sure. I kind of was lunch on the go, but it was all good.
Yeah, I was driving around the campus that evening. For some reason, I don't know where I was going, but I saw nothing but the buses and trailers and people. It was really a big event, and congratulations to you and all the people that put that together.
Well, thank you.
And Kent Brown, the homecoming, a lot more activities indeed than just the football game.
107th homecoming celebration on this campus.
Something else.
You know, it's an unbelievable tradition here. You know, we are one of the first. You know, there's always arguments about which school, where it started, and for decades, you know, we claim to be the original, and so did Missouri, so did Indiana, so did Michigan, so did and Baylor and Northern Illinois. I mean, there's all kinds of stories, but we know we're right there at the front end of this thing, and so we're all very proud of, and everybody who works here and who's gone here, very proud of the homecoming tradition that we've got, and very proud to have a football player as a grand marshal this year, Brandon Lloyd. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing him this afternoon on campus before the parade, and you know, he was a great player here and had a long NFL career, mm-hmm. and was a part of a Big Ten championship team, and so it'll be fun to see him back on campus.
I said a grand marshal is a grand man. I really like that guy.
Great guy, really good, from the Kansas City area, and terrific athlete, and you know, he left here a year left, which was obviously worked out pretty well for him. He had a, I think, 9-year NFL career, and so very, very much looking forward to seeing him. And I think he's going to talk to the team while he's back. And Lovey actually coached Brandon 1 year with the Bears, so he knows Brandon from several years ago. And so it'll be a good deal.
Tell us more about the parade. Where does it start, and what time, and all that, Barry?
Yeah, it starts at 6 p.m., and it's going to start at the normal location. A lot of the parade staging is actually taking place over by the College of Education and behind the Business Instructional Facility, so over there on 6th Street. Then we'll take a right on Armory and head up Wright Street to Green Street, and then we'll end at Nevada. So, again, pretty typical parade route. But again, a lot of different floats and things like that. Marching Illini and the alumni band will be close to the front of that. We're going to combine with our alums. We have over 200 alums coming back to help us celebrate the 149th year of the existence of Marching Illini and the Illinois band. So should be a really, really great night. Hopefully weather will agree. It'll be a little cooler, so everyone should bundle up. But that will start at 6 o'clock. And then for us, a little bit of a new homecoming, maybe tradition here. First for Illinois bands for sure, but in the Krannert Center, where it's going to be a little warmer than outside at 7:30, we've got our Wind Symphony, Wind Orchestra that are going to be playing about a 15-minute set each, and then the Marching Illini is going to give the finale to that. So tickets are still available through the Krannert Center. Should have a really big crowd. We're expecting a lot of our alums to come back and be part of that. So should be a really, really great night of some wonderful Illinois music.
Yeah, I hope a lot of people pick up on that, and I would predict that will be something people want to hear every year. We play that one great song. I believe it was recorded at Carnegie Hall or someplace, the Illini Fantasy.
Illini Fantasy, yeah. That will be performed tonight by the Wind Orchestra. So
we have enough time today. We might even play that. Mr. Bond is shaking his head that he can find it here in our new digs. By the way, this is your first appearance here. This is a little different look, isn't it?
Feel like we're in a fishbowl here a little bit. You know, can watch what we're doing here. So
yeah, that's
Ed has to watch what he wears every day now, and he can't, you know, and this popcorn out there, he's got to be careful in front of everybody.
It doesn't change much. He's still got the same old stuff on.
Look at that.
Yeah, you have a new shirt on, Ed? Well, that is a new one. And some old popcorn. Go ahead, Kent. Other things that are happening, or either one of you, start to wherever you want. There's so many things. This is if you look at the agenda, which I did the other day of the homecoming activities. I mean, it fills pages.
It does. You know, and they started last weekend, and every day, you know, they've got stuff going on, whether it's on campus or different activities. From a football standpoint, tomorrow, you know, it's an 11 o'clock kickoff, and so as always, the parking lot's open at 7 o'clock. Grange Grove will be full of activities. The Illini Walk is at approximately 8:30, is when they'll go through Grange Grove, and Barry and the band will be there as well. 90s Daughter is the featured band afterwards in the south end there at on the stage. That starts at 9 o'clock. I don't know if you saw the picture, the Clydesdales. We have some Clydesdales that'll be out there that are visiting campus this weekend, and they're obviously just ginormous horses and fascinating. They're beautiful animals, and so they're going to be there in the Lot 31 as well. And then
they're not being in the parade though, are they?
I don't think so.
I had heard a rumor that they were, but we don't have any factual information on that, so I'm not sure.
Don't want to throw any fake news.
Right.
No spoilers here.
Right. And then the first 5,000 fans who enter the stadium, there's a collectible Grey Ghost pint glass that goes along with our Hall of Fame series. We handed one out a couple weeks ago with the Nebraska game with Hall of Fame feature, and this will be has number 77 on it. And our uniforms this year, and it always causes a little conversation. Some people like it, some people don't, but I know our players like the Grey Ghost uniforms. Mm-hmm. We have it's actually a blue helmet with white tops and white or gray and gray, gray tops and gray bottoms, and so the Grey Ghost uniforms, which kind of in recognition of the Galloping Ghost, Red Grange, and we've kind of made that a homecoming tradition the last several years as well.
And a starting time of 11 o'clock. We've joked about this before, but some people years ago, Stan Eikenberry for one, said our homecoming games are going to be at 1 o'clock. They're not going to be at 11 o'clock or at 2:30 or at 7 o'clock or anything. It's going to be at 1 o'clock. Well, he quickly took a look at that television contract and said, maybe it'll start at a different time.
That's right. And one thing that the Big Ten has really tried to do is knowing that every campus has a lot of plans surrounding homecoming, and there's a lot of work that goes into that, have really made a great effort as getting those game times to us as early as possible for the homecoming dates. And so we've known that this has been an 11 o'clock start for a long, long time, so everybody can plan their events around it and still have a big day left, right? Our game should be over between 2 and 2:30. That leaves a big part of the day on Saturday remaining. And that'll be about we were talking a little bit before, Barry, about your alumni band. They're always kind of, it makes us a little nervous when all those people come back. Those guys, they get after it on Friday and Saturday
night.
So, yeah, hide the women and children.
Right,
sometimes.
Right. Look out, everyone.
What a great group. It'll be fun. It's always fun to see them on the field and joining your band and the current group of Marching Illini out there. And I know they get a big kick out of it. They have a great time.
They do.
And I want to mention that when the football game is over, if you're still looking for some activity like that, we've got the nation's number one volleyball team over at Huff on Saturday night against an Illinois team that showed remarkable skill and resilience. And up at Minneapolis the other day against the number five team in the country, the Minnesota volleyball team is just terrific. I think they've lost one match up there in the last 3 years, but we took them to five. And so Saturday night we'll have an opportunity against the number one team. So
would be great.
A lot of people come out.
Yeah, we played really well Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. I watched that on television on the Big Ten Network. And Penn State, traditionally, one of the great programs in America, and this is a great opportunity to really build our resume. That reminds me a little bit of one of the parking things is because of the volleyball Saturday night, that parking lot won't be available for football around Huff Gym. So that'll be reserved for the volleyball crowd coming in later that night. So I hope fans get a chance to take that in and make that part of the weekend because it will be exciting. It'll be really hopping tonight tomorrow night with both those teams out there, both really, really high-level volleyball.
And Barry, with all the alumni people in town and your band, what's your schedule like? And I know that you've already talked about what's going to be afterwards, so look out there. But I mean, you're
what are you talking about afterwards? That's during.
Yeah,
that's during is when you got to look out. Yeah,
that's during. Oh my goodness.
No, we're looking forward.
What kind of schedule do you have? I know it's a busy one.
We're looking forward to Sunday. No, it's a busy one, but it's good. You know, backtracking, since we're still talking about volleyball, we'll still have a band that will be at the volleyball game as well. So many of those students will be playing.
That makes a big difference.
Many of the events, and so they're always excited to be there in such a great atmosphere. So we hope a lot of folks make it out to support the team there. With an 11 a.m., it's pretty normal song and dance for us in terms of 7 a.m. rehearsal. Our alums will start to check in. Actually, today they're coming in, and then the rest of them come in tomorrow. So we've got rehearsal on the field. It's a very brief rehearsal to get them up to speed with what we're going to be doing for pregame, for halftime, 3-1, and then, kind of normal game time. So as Kent said, 8:15, Drumline will be out there at the Grange Grove, which is a great place, again, to tailgate before the game gets underway. And then 8:30 or so will be Illini Walk, and the alumni band will be joining us for that. Halftime, we're going to do a tribute to the band Chicago. It's their 50th anniversary, and they've got some great tunes. They're on tour right now. Unfortunately, we were unable to secure Chicago actually to be here with us, but we're going to definitely give them a great deal of credit with the music that they've got there. So alumni band will be joining us for that.
A little Saturday in the Park, maybe? A
little bit. You bet.
Steve Kelly will be happy. Steve Kelly was the biggest Chicago fan I've ever. Every bumper that he had when he was still had his show here was – with Chicago.
Chicago.
So, yeah. He'll be happy, but he'll be happy. But he's busy during halftime on the network. He does the halftime show, but no, he'll be listening.
He can check out the YouTube link afterwards. So should be a great time, though.
Well, in addition to all the things we've mentioned, I know that there are a lot of colleges and others that are having their own get-togethers on the campus, and the campus is just alive sort of all week, but especially today and tomorrow.
I can remember when I was a kid of jumping in a friend's car and parents' car and driving from Hammond, which is about 45 miles away, and we'd come up just to look at the banners that were on fraternity and sororities around homecoming and all the things that went with that. I don't think it's quite like it was back in that day, but it was always worth a special trip to Champaign. Even when we were going to the game to look at the homecoming displays and stuff that everybody had out. And so it's still, like you said, there's a lot of activity going on. Everybody's got people coming back, and that's part of the special thing about being on a college campus like this.
We lived in Springfield for quite a while, and we would come over here on a Friday night just to drive around to see the house decorations. And it was a great lineup. I mean, you couldn't drive 5-10 miles an hour because there was a line of cars. They don't do that anymore.
No.
Kids are just kind of hanging out now. It was a big, big job, though, but... anybody have any idea how many or how big the parade is going to be? I saw that a list the other day of who was in it. It's quite a parade, though, and you guys are heading it up, right?
Yeah. We'll be towards the front of that. We'll be entering from Gregory and 6th Street. So if anybody's ahead of that, unfortunately, it's just a small portion of the block that we won't be playing to, but just because of how much space we take up with the 375 that we have, and then we'll have about 200 alums as well that we're going to intermesh with the Marching Illini. So it's going to be a band of about 500 tonight behind the Chancellor and the President and ROTC. They're leading the parade, and, of course, Grand Marshal. So, should be again, a really, really nice night to go check out some fantastic floats and parade entries.
At the end of the parade is the pep rally. I don't think we've talked about that very much.
Pep rallies at 7.
What happens there?
Yeah, pep rallies at 7 p.m. right there on the quad in front of Folinger, right there on the steps.
And, Kent, do you have any idea who's going to be there, going to bring some football
we'll
players?
Well, the senior players will come over. I know Lovey and Tim Knox, who's our operations director, are bringing over the seniors to be a part of that. Rest of the team does their dinner. They go to the Champaign Country Club. Hate to get by without really didn't talk much about the game. Wisconsin comes into this game ranked 5th in the country and undefeated, and they're trying to win a spot in that college football playoff.
They're real close, aren't they?
They're very close. I mean, it's the top four teams, and right now they're ranked 5th, so they're certainly in the conversation. So every game for them is very important, especially this time of the year. They cannot afford to drop one, so – we certainly like to kind of build on some of the things that, that happened at Minneapolis last year, last week. Mm-hmm. You know, we played two quarterbacks, and I would expect that to happen again. They both bring different styles of play. But I thought we gave ourselves a real chance to tie the game there, and then we threw the pick six right after we got the ball there in the fourth quarter, and then we scored a touchdown, but we didn't have used our timeouts, and there wasn't much time left to get the ball downfield. But I think there's some, as we see this team continues to grow, we were really shorthanded at linebacker last week, and it looks like most of those guys are back. So we'll have at least a little more depth there. They were looking at guys like Barry and I for practice the other day. Hardy Nickerson was left pretty shorthanded at that position last week, so he was scrambling. And so this is one of those games that certainly monumental challenge ahead of us with a team that's as good as Wisconsin is. Paul Christ is a great job, and he and Lovey actually go way back. He was the year that Lovey coached at University of Wisconsin, Paul was on that team as a quarterback, and so he's known him for a long, long time. They're on a stretch run here of trying to get a spot in that Final Four.
This is a team that has a terrific running game, and I think one of the things that they overlook because of that is the fact they got a terrific defense as well. They're hard to run against, and they will run you to death, and they'll that of course opens up some good passing as well. So it's they've got a little bit of everything. I don't know where they get all those linemen.
What a tradition that they've had of finding
running backs
and finding those big linemen who, I mean, there's a lot of people who can get a lot of yards when they have big holes, right? Mm-hmm. And so they've done a great job of recruiting linemen, and that's one of the things that Lovey wants to get into that system, where they've got people lined up ready to fill in when people graduate, and they are big, and they've just got a great system there of bringing them in, plugging them in, and building them up, and getting them ready to go, and that's where we need to be, and that's where we're headed. Just we're not there yet.
Well, they didn't do it overnight. That's for sure.
That's right. That's right.
Well, guys, our time is up. Thanks so much for coming by. Glad you found your way up here to our new place, but. Thanks for your time in this busy weekend, and we'll do it again in a couple of weeks, I guess, huh?
2 weeks, yeah. For the Indiana game. Yeah. So, yeah, go Illini.
Thanks. Kent Brown and Barry Houser. We'll take a break here, a quick one, and then go right to the 10:30 news, and after that we'll have an open line up until 11 o'clock, at which time we might get that Illini fantasy played. What a wonderful piece that is. That Ed Bond likes that. He can rest because it's about 11 minutes long, or 12. We'll take this break, Ed, and come back with Brian Barnhart and the news. And welcome back to Penny of Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. The phone line's open at 351-5667. The Cathold Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. I guess I've been saying M15, it's supposed to be MI5, I'm told. I was reading the material from the JFK files. We appreciate the person calling in to correct me on that. Ralph Peters writes for Fox News, the Bergdahl sentencing isn't about him. It's about setting an example for future traitors. Hadn't seen anybody write it quite that way, but I'm sure a lot of people, not sure, but perhaps a lot of people agree with that. He says there are no mitigating circumstances. He must be punished for his crimes and to make an example of him. Yet the American left, which has only two military heroes since 9/11, Bergdahl and Chelsea Manning, continues to embrace Bergdahl's very tall tale that he only meant to stroll a dozen or so miles through hostile territory to the next military base so he could report on conditions in his unit, which Bergdahl found unsatisfactory. Based upon the evidence available to this writer, Bergdahl intended to go over to the enemy whom he had expected to welcome him. After he gave up, five terrorists and reportedly cash for their traitor son. They've never quite grasped why anyone would join our military, a domain of brutes, illiterate, psychopaths, and deplorables. But leftists do understand why soldiers would desert and betray our country by revealing our secrets. The heaviest sentence that could be imposed upon Bergdahl is life in prison, to make the point to all those contemplating such crimes in the future that there will be penalties. It matters not in the least to those who believe this country is not worth defending that honorable service members were gravely wounded in the Stop Everything Else search for Bergdahl that paralyzed our war effort in Afghanistan. And it certainly doesn't matter that those who were on the ground and involved in that hunt believe that as many as six of their comrades died looking for a man whom our military knew from the start was a deserter. A four-star general confirmed that within 48 hours of his desertion, but would not say so publicly. A moral coward who ironically got his own comeuppance a few years later. All that matters now for the left is that Bergdahl suffered enough during his 5 years under Taliban control. Of course, those wounded because of him will suffer all their lives. So, interesting, a piece by Ralph Peters. Don't know, he writes for Fox News. And that's what he thinks. I don't know what anybody else thinks. But let's go back to a couple of sports items here and try to get things going after we take this call. We go to Doug. Hello, Doug.
Hi, Jim. How you doing?
I am good. What's up, Doug?
Hey, I've been reading the newspaper over the last couple of days about the homecoming parade and the controversy there. And, you know, then some articles today. And I guess I'm struck by how far we've come from 1960 when John F. Kennedy was elected president. And I remember in his speeches, he said, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Yes, he did.
And the only thing we get anymore, and I'll bet half the people that cause the ruckus and, you know, just want to make waves don't even know John F. Kennedy's legacy. They're releasing the files now, which I thought was kind of interesting. But just how selfish the United States inhabitants have become. I mean, they want handouts. They want somebody to give them a job. People are different. We all have different talents. Engineers, not everybody can be an engineer. Not everybody can be a pro football player. But it seems like everybody wants the same degree of success, but life's not like that. And the other, my other comment is, in regards to the protests with athletes who want to protest the Star Spangled Banner, I find it ironic because probably three of the greatest performances in the history of singing the Star Spangled Banner are Whitney Houston, Marvin Gaye at the NBA All-Star Game, and Jimi Hendrix at Woodstock. And Jimi Hendrix is British. And yet, they are black Americans that revered, in their own way, the national anthem and honored it every chance they got. Martin Luther King always put his hand over his heart, even when he was protesting civil rights. So I'm thinking, what is it about people that don't think they have to honor the history of our country and what the country has been able to do so they've been able to have whatever life they've made it? Because everybody makes their own decisions, and I marvel at how people lack introspection and how they got to wherever they are in life. They ought to take a look in the mirror and either congratulate themselves on the hard work they've done or wonder what they can improve so that they can make their lot in life better. Don't look for other people to do it. So,
Doug, I agree with everything you have said. This political correctness that we have established here in the last, I don't know how long it's been, a couple of decades maybe, but it's just kind of strangling us. So we can't do anything because we're going to offend somebody. We can't say anything. We can't do anything. We envy people like you suggest. People should back off and think about all the other countries in this world where people are trying to get here just to live in this country.
Well, and man up, if you want to change your life, the only person who can do it is you. And everybody's looking for somebody else to do what they should do. And I just, whatever happened to accountability? So I've kind of been ranting. I appreciate the time, but I feel so strongly about that. I just get tired of people talking about what they're going to do. Quit talking and do it.
You have a great way of saying what you mean, Doug. Thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll take a break here. We're going to come back right after that and continue on. We have an open line going up until 11 o'clock this morning. We're going to try to slip in the Illini fantasy here after we take this break. Well, Barry Houser was talking about this, and I told him that we would try to work in the Illini fantasy. This has been recorded some time ago, but one of the University of Illinois bands, I thought it was at Carnegie Hall. I could be wrong about that, but anyway, it's a marvelous piece of music, and we invite you to listen on this homecoming at the university where homecoming was started. No matter what they say, we are number one, the Illini Fantasy. The University of Illinois Wind Symphony, they have a concert tonight. It's at the Krannert at 7:30. So if you like that kind of music, and who doesn't, and similar, catch them tonight after, this will be after the parade and after the pep rally on over at Krannert. And I call your attention to the News Gazette's edition this morning. Talks about a lot of University of Illinois grads and got statements from alumni that have memories that make for good slogans. So take a look at that. Five places gone but not forgotten on the campus. Thanks for being with us. Talk to you on Monday with Lauren Tate at 9 here on WDWS in Champaign-Urbana.